This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Deep down, we know that there is more to human existence than polite, prefabricated exchanges about the weather or other mundane topics. So why is it that when we're standing online at the deli counter or on a plane stuck on the tarmac or at a cocktail party, we can think of absolutely nothing interesting to say? No need to stammer. Help is here from Chris Collin and Rob Baedeker, co-authors of What to Talk About, a guide for spicing up our conversational skills. And Chris Collin and Rob Baedeker, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I was wondering which one of you was going to talk first.
That's a big problem, isn't it, in conversation, especially when you have more than two people.
On the radio.
There's that, yeah, awkward stall. So you've got to come prepared to put a foot forward and to offer something.
Well, we believe in breaking the don't talk about money rule. We believe in breaking almost every rule because saying the right thing is too much pressure. Saying the wrong thing is often far more interesting, and that's the point of conversation. We're trying to be interesting and memorable. Life is short. You got to talk a little more boldly.
Almost every rule? Are there any things that are just taboo you won't even touch?
We're just going to wait and see if you do that, and then we'll let you know if you said something horribly offensive.
Well, let's make it clear. You are not scientists. You're not motivational speakers, but you're academics. So who's your audience for this book?
Our audience, well, at first it was ourselves, and then it sort of became everyone when we realized that a lot of people shared our problem. We found that we were sort of panicking all the time, really. I mean, we're relatively smart people, especially me. And yet, you know, you find yourself in an elevator or on the seat next to someone on a plane, and you sort of panic over what to say. Or you have a really close friendship or a romantic relationship. You've been together or been friends for many years, and your conversations are sort of middling.
So you guys are really good at filling in those awkward pauses with some conversation starters or cold openings, as you call them. My favorite might have been, I bet your spirit animal is an attic raccoon. Sure to get a...
Virginia, that's your spirit animal, isn't it?
How did you know?
There's something, I think, in the voice. We're very intuitive. And
being intuitive is part of being a good talker. You've got to relax. Sometimes you have to close your eyes in a conversation, tune into your instincts.
And you're very resourceful, obviously. We just met you. But an attic raccoon has figured some stuff out, how to find a warm house. You know, this is a compliment.
Well, thank you very much, because I'm not sure if I feel complimented. But what are some of the other kind of cold openings that you guys have come up with?
Well, often we need conversation in these sort of glancing exchanges with the person at the cash register in the checkout lane at the grocery store. You know, Rob, what would you say to that person when you don't just want to say hi? How's it going?
I would say, you know, offer a dilemma to people. This gets the mind going in a different way. I would say, if you had a third eye in the middle of your back and you were online dating, would you mention it in your profile or would you wait for the first date? It really lets people open up.
Yeah. Does anybody look at you when you say something like that to them and maybe think, I don't think I want to talk to this person?
If that happens, you're doing something right. No, but in all seriousness, you know, we think it's okay to sort of go into weird territory every now and then. You don't want to be totally weird and have no friends. But in our experience, people are open to all sorts of things, far more than we think when we walk into a conversation. People want to go into left field every now and then because, you know, deep inside, we're all weird.
People do say, though, that they dislike small talk. You know, it's superficial, it's party talk. But they seem to do plenty of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, small talk is a great starting place. We don't dismiss small talk, but you gotta make it bigger. You gotta push further. So the classic small talk subject is the weather, right?
Right.
And how's the weather? It's cold, it's hot. Pretty finite category. But push that into big talk by asking a weather-related question. For example, what's the coldest you've ever been? Or what's the worst sunburn you've ever had? You take the weather and you push it into the realm of story. And now we're getting somewhere.
I guess that's sort of like approaching a good interview. You know, you don't want to ask people a yes or no question. You want to make them tell a story.
Right. Yeah, curiosity is key, right? And also admitting your own ignorance. Too often we're worried about looking smart or letting on that we don't know something. But if you can put your heads together with somebody, there's ignorance is fun. In other words, you can explore the question of what is wind? What is thunder? Speaking of weather-related topics, I kind of know, but I'm not totally sure. And if I pair up with a good conversation partner, we can have fun exploring that.
What exactly was the Korean War about? Could I really describe the difference between a democracy and a republic? You know, if you sort of expose your ignorance, we find that that's a great way to connect with people because then they can expose theirs and then you can sort of bond over how stupid you are. And that's sort of a sweet feeling. It's poignant.
You're talking a little bit also about how we reflect each other, right? There's a segment in the book on mirroring that our mm-hmm. responses to small questions actually matter. So tell us about this mirroring phenomenon.
Well, mirroring is repeating blandly the same words or idea of the person you're talking to. We do it all the time, right? So it's a beautiful day. Yeah, it's a beautiful day. And the conversation just drops a transmission, so to speak, and all of its tires go flat. Instead of mirroring, we suggest taking the conversation to an unexpected place. So instead of it's a beautiful day, it's a beautiful day, it's a beautiful day. Yeah. Do you ever think about the fact that ghosts don't visit the gym? They go to creepy old houses, but you never hear about someone's deceased grandmother on the Nautilus machine. Why is that?
There's also a lot of mirroring that happens just in the most common conversation starter and killer, which is, hi, how's it going? And we mirror by even indulging that question, fine, it's going fine. And Rob and I are big advocates of answering the question that you wish had been asked. How's it going? You know, I've been thinking about the Chuckwalla lizard, which is a real lizard that can live without water. And pretty soon you're talking about what it means to live without water, how the scientists even learned this, and you can start talking about something more interesting than how's it going.
I'm speaking with Chris Collin and Rob Bedeker. They are co-authors of the book What to Talk About. This is for on a plane or at a cocktail party or in a tiny elevator with your boss's boss. What kind of things do you say? Okay, so you guys are talking about a lot of interpersonal stuff, but how about a party? Now, this is the sort of the nadir for people who are fearful of coming up with the right conversation. How do you prepare?
Well, one thing we recommend is preparing. You know, I think people are a little allergic to the idea of coming to a social situation with some kind of canned answer. You might seem like a phony or something.
But preparing, you mean like, you know, sort of in the bathroom mirror before you go, preparing some small talk?
Any mirror, bathroom, bedroom, car mirror.
They make tiny mirrors now you can actually carry around in your pocket.
But anyways, no, we mean, you know, having something ready to go in case your mind goes white and you absolutely can't summon a thought. And then it's fine to say, hey, you know, this reminds me of something I've been thinking about.
You use the word nadir, Virginia, which is a great word. And if I had nothing else to talk about right now, I might ask you about that word, which is an example of what we call a trigger word, pulling something out of the other person's sentence and being curious about it or taking it in a new direction.
Well, I wondered if I should have said nadir, actually.
I wondered, too. You know, that's something to talk about. How confident were you when you said nadir? You know, I think we all sort of wonder about these kinds of things all the time. Did I say it wrong? Oh, my God.
But I just took that risk. I guess I feel like I can talk with you guys.
The possibilities are proliferating here because you made an offer, what we call an offer. You took a little bit of a risk, and we were not afraid to expose our ignorance, and now we're talking.
Well, all right, I'm going to set the scene here. We're at a party, or you're at a party. You don't know that many people. Everybody seems to be insulated in impenetrable conversations. They're talking about nadirs or nadirs and fascinating things like that. So how do you break in?
Well, one thing that you can do is play a game. People like games. We're all children inside. Walk into a circle and say, okay, I'm just going to introduce myself. My name is so-and-so. Who would each of you be if you had to be cast in a movie? You know, who do we think we are? Are you the nebbishy accountant? Are you the sarcastic wisecracking friend? Are you the swashbuckling hero? And pretty soon you're not, you know, it's a safe topic. Everyone knows about movies. It's funny. But you're sort of introducing yourselves.
I've also liked the game that you've got in here called the Versus game. So you can mm-hmm. start a sort of debate with pie versus cake or Kramer versus Kramer.
Yeah, everybody says Kramer. Everybody's got an opinion. That's one of the generous moves you can make is to ask people for their opinion. The versus game is a perfect way to do that. Everybody has an opinion about pie versus cake, and they've got a story about why they prefer one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to remember in a party situation is even if you just do horribly and everything goes south and you just say something stupid or you just stand there blinking awkwardly for a minute, we believe in the pay it forward model here at What to Talk About. You have just given these people something to talk about with the next person. They can talk about how disastrous this last conversation was.
And let's face it, it's pretty easy to move between states these days. You can pack up and get out of there if it really goes bad.
Are there benefits of this beyond just, you know, having a two-way conversation? How do we reward being a great conversationalist?
Fame, money, relationships, experience, and
food.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, all the big moments in our lives, or most of them, involve some kind of talking. There's the job interview. There's the first date. There are the random encounters that turn out to form lasting bonds. They start with talking, and sometimes with small talk.
Facebook and Twitter are often dismissed as party conversation, as superficial conversation. Is the nature of conversation changing since we have Facebook and Twitter? Because, you know, there are a lot of provocative things that are put out in social media.
I think that they are great. They're wonderful. Anytime you're having a nice time and sharing pictures of your kids, that's great. But I also think it's good to be mindful of the ways that they are sucking the thoughts out of our heads, even when we're not aware. I mean, think about the last time you were waiting for your hot dog to finish microwaving. What did you do? You took the phone out of your pocket and you Instagrammed. It used to be that we would have thoughts pop into our head and the well of ideas would gradually replenish. And now we worry that that's not happening as much as it should.
On the other hand, you can hone your language, especially on Twitter, where brevity is a necessity. It allows you to sharpen your thoughts and you can recycle those in the real world.
Well, good to know. Thank you for that helpful tip and all the rest, Chris and Rob.
Thank you, Virginia.
Thanks, Virginia.
Chris Collin and Rob Bedeker. They are co-authors of What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss, all sorts of different situations. And if you'd like to be further convinced, you can watch a brilliant little book trailer for them. The link is at wordofmouthradio.org.
Don't you hate that?
Hate what?
Uncomfortable silences. Why do we feel it's necessary to yak about in order to be comfortable?
I don't know. That's a good question.
One way people try to avoid potentially awkward conversations is to avoid them altogether and communicate solely through clever posts and adorable pictures on social media. Problem is, if you want to stay connected to the cool kids, you have to go where they go and be ready to jump onto the platform of the moment. Producer Taylor Quimby wondered what happens to our old profiles when we move on to the next big thing. Turns out, not much.
MySpace. One could say it's the velvet leisure suit of social media.
Do you have a MySpace account?
MySpace, yes, actually do.
Do you use it on a regular basis?
I haven't touched it in years, to be honest.
But it's probably still there.
Yes.
It's pretty normal to look back at old outfits and wonder, what was I thinking? History hasn't been kind to hammer pants or the fanny pack. And like the leisure suit, MySpace has suffered the same sort of fate. It's become a punchline.
Do you know anybody that has a MySpace?
Yeah, my dad has a MySpace.
But lest we forget, we're not talking about a trend from 15 or 20 years ago. In fact, it wasn't until 2008 that Facebook users first outnumbered fans of MySpace. Less than 6 years ago. MySpace was the hottest social media platform since Friendster. Remember Friendster? And even today, MySpace claims to have some 36 million users. But who are they? Do you have one? Did you ever have one? And when you decided to move on, did you delete your account?
All right.
and see if we can find Taylor's MySpace.
Taylor?
That's producer Zach Nugent and my boss, Maureen McMurray.
MySpace.
So, if you haven't already guessed, there's a reason I'm the one telling the story.
Okay, here it is. Oh, my.
That's Taylor. Yep. my God. What is going on here? Is that Taylor?
Around 2006 and 7, I was really into MySpace. And then, like many others, I abandoned it. I didn't delete my account, I just kind of drifted away. And since nobody I knew used it anymore, I sort of thought MySpace would just drift away too. But in 2012 and 2013, MySpace redesigned the site to focus on the one demographic still using it, musicians. They ditched the classic MySpace look, and all the blog posts, messages, likes, and dislikes we agonized over, it all got sent to the digital trash bin. All of it except for one thing, the photos. Which means if you haven't deleted your account, its ghost is still there, and your leftover MySpace photos are up for the whole world to see.
Taylor, did you ever have a shaved head?
Shaved head with ping pong balls as eyes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's you?
Brushing your teeth?
In the MySpace days, I looked a lot different.
And there's one of him.
As like the Joker?
Do you have blood on your face?
Frankly, I didn't use a lot of discretion when posting pictures.
Do we want to just describe this photo?
He's pantsless and he has an axe.
He's in a Speedo. He's in a straight-up Speedo.
My MySpace page was an extension of my musical alter ego at the time, an experimental project I called Milky Pink.
Like this, it looks like you're part of some cult.
It was pretty weird.
I don't know if you can read the caption underneath, but it says Milky Pink, murder capital of the world.
That was, okay, so the explanation here is that was the cover art for my first album as Milky Pink.
That's it?
Yeah.
And that's you?
Yep. Now, none of this stuff is so bad it would ever get me fired, I think. But should I ever be looking for a new job, it's within the realm of possibility that an employer might see it. And the fact that it's just sitting out there for anybody with an internet connection to see makes me pretty uncomfortable. And work aside, I'm a dad now. I don't plan on hiding my past from my son, but I would like to be able to control how it's presented. So, here it is. The point of this whole story, how to delete your MySpace profile. Step 1. If you know the email and password to your old account, then congratulations. This is going to be a snap. All you have to do is log back in, go to your settings, and select Delete Account. If, like me, though, you don't have a clue what your email address was when you signed up for MySpace, or you signed up with a college email that's since been deactivated, it's a little more complicated. Before you can delete an account, you've got to prove that it's yours to delete. You need to sign the MySpace Declaration of Ownership. It's pretty easy to find once you know what you're looking for. To make it even easier, we've got a link at wordofmouthradio.org. But there is one tricky part. It requires that you attach a digital copy of a government-issued ID. Seriously. Once you've got that done, you can pretty much just fill it out and press send.
All right, I'm doing it, guys. Oh, wait. It's mad at me. What did I fill out here?
The form is going to ask you for all the information we have already established you do not have access to. So you've got to find a workaround, like I did.
Okay, maybe if I just fill out don't know for all those fields.
Yeah.
Yeah, hold on.
Okay, now you can press send. And from there, you're just waiting. For me, it wasn't very long. I actually got an email from MySpace the very next day.
Already?
Yeah, I know. Let's see what it says. Thank you for filling out the deletion form. I have scheduled the profile in question for removal. So I guess that was it. Please allow up to 72 hours. Dexter.
This is sincerely Dexter.
MySpace, more efficient than we thought.
My guess, Zach, is that like 90% of the staff is dedicated to deleting people's accounts at this point.
As it turns out, deleting your profile may not be the eye-rolling ordeal you'd imagine. And depending on what you find still there, if you happen to Google yourself, it could be a tremendous relief. So if you never deleted your old account, it might be time to do a little digital housekeeping. After all, there's really no such thing as MySpace or your space when it comes to the internet. It's everybody's space, for better and for worse. For Word of Mouth, I'm Taylor Quimby.
Now, you may not be able to find Taylor's MySpace page anymore, but you will find the link to the MySpace Declaration of Ownership form and much more on how to delete your account. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us for poetry for people who do not like poetry. That's when Word of Mouth continues.